Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Aggressive Negotiations, that wonderful little piece of Star Wars that, well, let's just be honest, if we could hang out anywhere, it'd probably be Dex's Diner, because that's just the kind of Star Wars fans we are. I am one of your hosts, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always, across the other side of the table at Dex's Diner, John Mills.
Yes, I have recently figured out where the Kaminoan saber darts were. It turns out they were in the Daily Blue Plate special, and it broke a tooth. So I'm going to be having to talk to Dex sometime soon. But
just because basilisks can digest that stuff doesn't mean humans can. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. I should get at least a free Jawa juice out of this one. So,
that or at least a Corellian whiskey or something.
This isn't the topic today, I know, but maybe we need to put something on the table to talk about whether Dex's Diner actually met Coruscanti health standards, health codes.
Can you imagine trying to be the health code administrator for Coruscant?
Yes. Can you imagine how many they must have had? It was probably like half the planet was a health inspector.
You'd have to be. So, I mean, gosh. maybe we should make that a poll. Because, John, we've been having a lot of fun over at the Jedi Masters Twitter handle, which is The Jedi Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asking a lot of questions recently about some just some fun things that have been happening in a fandom or just questions that I've had. And we did a poll on what people thought the best Star Wars book of the year was. And the winner was Thrawn with 39%. So
I can see that. I have not read every book in the poll, but it's going to be tough for anybody to unseat Thrawn. Did you vote in the poll yourself?
I did. I believe that I voted for Thrawn, but right behind it was Inferno Squad with 33%, and I almost voted for that. So it was one or the other, and I kind of just closed my eyes and picked one between the two because, honestly, I absolutely adored Inferno Squad. So both of those books, I think, deserve to be where they are. The other two in the poll were Rebel Rising at 16% and Empire's End at 12%. So,
There you go.
Yeah. We also, Dave Filoni just came out Dave Filoni? I think it was Sam Witwer. Excuse me. Forgive me, Star Wars fans. Had talked about idea that Dave had talked to him about maybe bringing Starkiller in as an Inquisitor in Star Wars Rebels. And so I just thought, well, I wonder if people would have actually liked to see that. So we had a poll and we said yes, no, or maybe. 25% said yes, but 44% said no.
Yeah, and 31% said maybe. So that sounds like a conditional.
Yes.
Because I think there were a couple of people that replied where they said if there was anybody that could figure out a way to do it, it would be Filoni could figure out a way to do it. And I think we both very much agree with that. But I voted no. How did you vote in the poll?
I said yes, because I felt like Dave Filoni could do it right. I trusted him. If he had the idea, I feel like he could have pulled it off. And I thought it would have been kind of a fun way to pay homage to the character that we'll never see again.
It's so difficult too, specifically because, yes, I answered no, that sentence is a nightmare, but I answered no in the poll, but at the same time, I wasn't thinking in terms of the fact that if somebody had come to me before it ever happened and said they were going to bring Darth Maul back, I would have been highly skeptical that I would have liked it as much as I did.
That's very true.
So probably I should have voted yes and had a little more faith that things would have gone better. But the 31% maybe is very intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the poll is very nearly split three ways. I wonder how it would play if we did it binary, either yes or no, up, down.
That's a good question. I do feel like no would probably take it. But who knows? So something really interesting happened 9 years ago around this time, John.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Clone Wars movie came out. And so I thought it would be kind of fun just to see who had seen it in the theaters, who hadn't, and, you know, if you saw it in the theaters, did you like it? And so that was the poll. You saw it in theaters, liked, 34% of people said yes, that was their choice. 4% said they saw it in the theaters and didn't like it, and 62% didn't see it in the theaters. So as we kind of have talked about a little bit with that movie, it does seem like one of those, almost like, you know, we talked about in the 602 Club, Batman Mask of the Phantasm. This does seem to be something that people just kind of missed.
Yeah, you know, it was released in August, and it was a lot of people, I think, were still in the hate the prequels phase.
That's true.
And so they were highly, I remember before it came out that, there was some blog I was reading. And I mean, it was a funny line, but, they said, see Star Wars characters like you never have before. And somebody said, oh, two dimensional characters. I saw that already with the prequels. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right, fine. But what's interesting to me is it reminded me of the fact that my friend Joey and I actually had a bit of a dust up about it, because I don't remember if he went to go see it, but I remember that he lamented that it was a bad idea for it having to be released in the theaters because it was the first Star Wars movie not to open at number one or something like that. And I looked at him and I was like, that is such a silly reason to care whether it was released in theaters. Like, that's just so silly. It could have opened at number 10. It doesn't mean it's a good or a bad movie. You know, it's that whole thing of being wrapped up in the idea that, like, the box office matters to whether the movie's any good or not. There are plenty of movies.
Whether you like the movie. I mean, right. That's really all that matters, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There are plenty of movies that never made it to number one that are still masterpieces and wonderful, you know, works of cinema. So,
also, you know, asked everybody what their favorite animated series was. And so we had the Clone Wars and Rebels and Freemaker Adventures. Now, the thing about this one is they all have so many good points to them, right? I mean, none of these shows are stinkers. They're great shows. And so 70% said it was the Clone Wars, 26% said Rebels, and 4% said the Freemakers. You know, if I wasn't going to vote for Clone Wars for myself, it probably would have been Freemakers, I think.
I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
I said that the battle for number two is hot, and I mean that.
It is hot.
Because right now, okay, if I back it up, if I take season three with Thrawn out of the equation and I go pound for pound, two shows that have gone two seasons, Freemaker has had a better, more balanced two seasons. That first season with Rebels, it's so much trouble finding traction.
Yes.
It's so much trouble getting there. And everybody admits that. So if I go, you know, just the two seasons against each other, Freemaker, I think, wins handily in that battle. It's the third season of Rebels that mixes it up.
Yeah.
And I actually that we get a third season of Freemaker sometime soon so that we can
we get that third season of Freemakers too, because that show is just killing it these days.
Pure gold.
Last poll before we dive into our topic, and it'll actually play into what we're actually going to talk about tonight, John. So the Hollywood Reporter came out and said that they are working on a Kenobi movie, like that it is in early talks. They're already actually looking at a director to come on and for filming and obviously for writing. Did see today that, you know, Anthony Bresnikan, who covers all the Star Wars stuff for EW, said, you know, his sources did confirm that this is very early still. So that's why Lucasfilm hasn't come out and said it. So just asked everybody what their excitement level on this was. And the choices were just can't hide it, excited, so-so, don't care. And we got a tight race here for just can't hide it and excited, which, you know, both at 33%, I feel like it seems like the majority of fandom is right there with this.
Yeah, I mean, if you compress this down to three choices, you've got 66% that are, on board with this, which is, I think, a stellar response, given the fact that, you know, as time has gone on, Force Awakens is not as well embraced. Rogue One did not go over with everybody as well as it went over with some. And so, you know, that is, I think, an overwhelmingly positive response. I fell, as much as we both want that Obi-Wan movie, as much as we've talked about the character, talked about what we want out of that movie, talked about concepts that we would want them to go after, I fell into excited, not just can't hide it. And I think it's because I think that my excitement level winds up being a casualty of the fact that we know so much behind the scenes stuff that's going on. All of the stuff with Rogue One, and while I enjoyed Rogue One, I did not love it at the level that you did, right? And I lay that at the feet specifically of where I felt the seams showed, knowing that they fired the directors for the Han Solo movie and brought on Ron Howard. That type of stuff does affect my excitement level. It really does. Yeah.
No, I understand completely. And I think that could be why maybe some people at 21% say so-so on it, and 13% are at don't care. You know,
don't care puzzles me. I don't know how you could
too,
not.
Because I was like, who's going to really choose this? Because how could you not care about seeing about Kenobi? But I mean, I guess there are people that feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there are.
I mean, we're not talking about a Boba Fett movie, right?
Oh Lord, I am not on board with a Boba Fett movie. Please don't do that to me. But I like, the only thing I can say about don't care is. And it's very tough sometimes to see outside of our tunnel vision, but there are people who legitimately just don't like the Star Wars movies anymore. There are people who have not liked a Star Wars movie since 1983. And we've talked about this where it's like, it's that whole, it's a very interesting thing. Are you, the types of fans, they're the old school. They only like 77 to 83 untouched. And then there are people that are like, well, 77 to 83, but whatever. People that hate the prequels, people that are blah, blah, blah. You go through all of that stuff. So I could see the don't care in that arena. And I think some of the people that would fall into so-so or don't care definitely are the people that, and we have friends of our own that are like, can't they go outside this era? Can't they move on and, you know, give us a group of characters like Rogue One, but not in that time period?
Mm-hmm.
Which is an intriguing question. Why can't we? You know, I mean, we still could. You know, well, this franchise is far from over.
And this is obviously one of those things where it's like, you've got Ewan McGregor, and obviously, if you're going to do this film, you're going to do it with him. There's absolutely no reason you would do it without him. And the reason you're going to do it now is because of he being the perfect age to play Obi-Wan at that point in time when they're going to put this film. And so, you know... But I can understand the reason for wanting to play in other eras where, gosh, you know, do, you know, really early Republic stuff. Do, old, you know, Knights of the Old Republic. Do, I mean, just start making crazy things up, you know. You can do that, you know, and still have it be great Star Wars. And the most fundamental thing about it is to stay with the core of what makes Star Wars Star Wars, you know. And if you do that, you could Clone Wars proved you can tell any kind of story.
I would love, yes, you're absolutely right. Clone Wars did prove that. And I think, I hope against hope that the reason they're stuck in this era is because they can explore those depths. And we still, I think they still don't really know what happened between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. They know that stuff happened, but they, you know, like it's not very, you know, there's not like a very clear path. I would love to see a movie set between, and I, you know, we've talked about this stuff before, but I would hope they would move into the era, you know, and I've said this before, between Jedi and Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
God, give me an episode where like there's a stormtrooper who's not fighting anymore and he has to be accepted by the community or something. And people, you know, it's like a whole thing about people can redeem themselves because redemption is a big thing in the Star Wars films.
I mean, you know, I absolutely agree with you, and I 100% agree also with the fact that they don't, I don't think they completely know what happened. I think they know some bullet points, story group wise, that kind of gets them from Return of the Jedi to the Force Awakens time period.
Right.
But, you know, they've even said, we're kind of making this up as we go along. So they don't have a story Bible for the, you know, the sequel trilogy.
Right.
You know, this isn't even George Lucas where he has sketched out ideas or rough story elements. It seems to be much more free flowing, and you know, we'll see how that works. I mean, you know, got to say, at the moment, I'm pretty on board with what I've seen for The Last Jedi. I still have not been able to find the magazine, so I haven't read that article yet. We'll keep that watch going. We'll see if next week I've gotten a copy of it yet. Yeah,
is there anything substantially different about the magazine versus what's online?
I have no
though?
Idea. I just I like reading things in a magazine format. I enjoy that personally.
Come on, man.
I
get
don't
with the
like
now.
Digital magazines. I really don't like the way they're set up personally. I find it kind of annoying. And I just enjoy that, you know, I don't know. And part of that, I think, is the Star Wars Entertainment Weekly and you know, Time and what was it? Vanity Fair. Those were the ones that had the big splashes for the Star Wars. They always had the big Star Wars issues, you know, and I have a bunch of those from, especially when the prequel era. So, you know, it's kind of to me, it's a nostalgic thing. So anyway. But
no, that's fine. I mean, like, you know, if you're collecting the magazines, like, I get that. I do. And I'm just busting your chops. You know me.
Oh,
I fully embrace the digital. And, you know, the Ministry of Truth will have the easiest time with me, because it'll be like, oh, we have to go. Oh, we don't have to burn anything in his house. We can just hit a button here and all of his books are approved.
Exactly.
You know,
which you could do, because, John, we're going to talk about some comics tonight. That's really,
we are.
I mean, we've talked about all those polls, but the reason we're actually here is to talk about Marvel's Darth Maul series, the short five-part miniseries that they did here about Darth Maul. And this story takes place before The Phantom Menace. And I just kind of want to ask you, before we kind of talk through some of the stuff that happens, in general, reading through each of the five issues and getting through the whole series, what are your general thoughts about, you know, this Darth Maul story?
Well, the first thing, and I was a comic book collector back in the day. I still have, and I love to tout this, I still have my original print run of the entire old Marvel series, with the
Very
exception
nice.
Of a couple. There are a couple of issues that I don't have. Still really chaps my protocol droid that the 107, the last issue, the pharmacy that I bought it from when I was a kid growing up, didn't carry the last issue because it was the last issue. They were just like, we're not going to carry it. I was like, no,
come on.
all of these years, right? But the for me, the number one thing I always gravitate to with a comic book is the art. So what I will say with this series is I give the art highest possible marks across the board. I thought that the line work was great. I thought that the artist's style was great, and it was kinetic in the right kind of way. It wasn't the errant ink strokes of like a Rob Liefeld from back in the day. If anybody remembers that name, he's actually the creator of Deadpool. But I thought the line work was great. I thought the colors were amazing, because the colorist chose a very muted palette that was appropriate to it. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked the way that the panels were arranged. I liked the splash pages. I liked all of those sorts of things. Story-wise, it left me a little bit flat. But for me, a good comic, is going to be the type where I'm going to give it more than one chance, because I like looking at the art and leafing through, even digitally. And so this is a comic where, for the art alone, I might ignore the word balloons and just sort of like scroll through and just see how he treated, because I thought that his facial work with Maul was subtle and good. And I like the fact that it was a Twi'lek Padawan and those sorts of things there. Now, that's all of the positive stuff, you know, out of the way. What your first impressions? How did you approach it?
Yeah, so I read this issue by issue, and you know, I remember when the first issue ended, I was like, "That's it, like that, yeah. That what? Like, okay." And I think what was most interesting about this for me was reading it in light of what we know from Maul from the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know of him from the Rebels series, where I feel like he became such a dynamic character And maybe this is on purpose, but I feel like here he became much more flat. And that, I think, is on purpose because Maul hasn't been through all those experiences yet.
Sure.
And so kind of at this point, he is just a, you know, Sith rage machine.
Yes, I grant you that. And the thing is, I don't fault the writer of the comic for this. They had a very obvious plan of where they wanted Maul character-wise. And putting him in this time period, I too am pretty forgiving of, well, this isn't the dynamic Maul that we got to know in the Clone Wars series. I mean, Maul wasn't... Look, this is something that I think a lot of fans, myself included, had to come to terms with over time. Maul's not very dynamic in Phantom Menace either. He's got a great look, but he's, you know, right. He's window dressing. He's a one and done character. He serves his purpose, but you know, he's not, you know, it's not the greatest character in the saga or anything right. like that. So I see why he's like this here, but this is very much something where I feel like this is a Darth Maul story I've gotten before. And that is why it doesn't, I don't want them to plumb Darth Maul like this. We got Shadow Hunter, that novel from the past. We've had other stuff. We had actually a really great series where he teamed up with his brother with Savage Press, which I that was still under the Dark Horse imprint. Yeah, I think. It was a number of years ago.
Yeah, there was a series that came out, and it's the only Dark Horse series that is canon. And
okay, but that would be Son of Dathomir, wasn't it?
And that was Son of Dathomir.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I mean, they did another Darth Maul series as well, I believe. And so, yeah, I mean, you are right to call out that it does feel a little bit like this isn't new territory.
Right, right. And I think that even speaks to the Obi-Wan poll where there would be people who are so-so or don't care, is even though this is now quote-unquote canon, I've walked this path before. I've explored this territory with Maul. And even though, and I don't consider this a spoiler, even though I guess it's sort of a surprise show up, but there, I won't drop names. You can decide whether this is spoiler territory or whatever, but there are some familiar characters from the Clone Wars series who show up, who work with Maul. And that didn't work for me. It really didn't work for me. I would have preferred, because the whole thing through this whole series is Maul saying, my master can't know what I'm doing. I have to work in secret. People can't know who I am. Well, even just taking a little bit from Phantom Menace, he seems like a lone wolf type of operator.
Right.
I didn't understand why he had a crew with him.
See, that's and I think, let's just say, if you haven't read the series, we are going to start to get into some spoiler territory. So I wanted to give kind of our first impressions. And now, if you haven't read this, go read it, come back and listen to the rest. But,
yeah,
you know, what I liked was the fun of seeing Cad Bane and Aurra Sing in this, mm-hmm. because that's fun, right? And both you and I think have very similar feelings about that kind of idea. Yeah, man, put those characters together. It's fun. But when you think about the story structure and like mm-hmm. what Maul's trying to do, it does seem kind of odd that he has an entourage. Like,
yes.
Because like you said, he's trying to keep this under the radar. He's trying to hide what he's doing from Palpatine, because the whole narrative of this is that he finds out that there is a Padawan that has been stolen and is now on sale on the black market, and his goal is to get that Padawan, win that Padawan, or, you know, take it however he has to, and then be able to duel it and finally kill a Jedi.
Right. For me, the entourage thing, what doesn't work about it is, if we're going to go back down this road, at the very least, like Shadow Hunter, again, just like Phantom Menace, Maul was the lone wolf. He went out and he is so eager to prove his mettle, as it were. And I think that this storyline winds up being more focused and you can spend more time developing Maul and giving more insight than I'm a tool of rage and I wish to kill the Jedi and we're going to have our revenge. Give him a little more depth that ties into what pays off in the Clone Wars with his ambitions. He doesn't just want to go, you know, every Sith doesn't just want to go out and do his master's bidding. Every Sith wants to take over from his master, wants to assassinate and take the throne, as it were. I would like to see more of that at play. Let's take the opportunity to let the character breathe and give him some sort of what we want from the Obi-Wan movie, some added depth so that when we go back and we see the other ones, we say, oh, yeah, okay, I got that.
Well, and see, what I like about what you're saying is that there is a point in one of the later issues where he's finally fighting this Padawan, and he's thinking to himself, I wonder, she's got some anger in her. She's got some rage. I bet, what if I could turn her? And then he's like, oh, she's too far gone. It won't work. You know, and if that had been the goal here for him to try and set up basically his own secret apprentice, you know, I think that would have been much more interesting in the same way that Dooku had Asajj during the Clone Wars. And then you can kind of set up this precedent that these Sith and even the ones in training are always kind of looking for ways to, like you said, destroy their master, but also become the master Sith themselves, passing on what they've learned and all that. That creates, I think, a much more interesting story than just the rage machine.
And the thing is, you have a payoff. You even have a sequel or a longer series or what have you, where, you know, maybe Maul made his play and Palpatine like destroys his Padawan and punishes Maul and is like, yeah, good try, kid. No.
Now let's go. You're not ready for this league yet.
Right. Now let's talk about what's going on with the Trade Federation right now. Like, you know, bring it in that way. You know, that would be, because the thing is that that's sort of how he operates in Darth Plagueis by Luceno, which I really enjoyed, where you find out there's all of this intrigue going on behind the scenes of the stuff. Like, I feel like a little bit of that is lost. Like, we've almost regressed Maul now to just an attack dog. And it's that's not as interesting to me.
Right. And what would have been nice is to see that part with the hints of what he would kind of become, say, in the Clone Wars, and then in, because the whole thing about what happens to him in the Clone Wars and then in Rebels is Dave always said, and from talking with George, is that Maul is meant to be the person who can take over. So he's going to have been trained in all of these things like diplomacy and whatnot. Like, he's not just going to be an attack dog. No Sith is, that's not their point when there are only two. You're passing on all of your knowledge. And so I do think it would have been much more interesting to see hints of that in this, other than just like this, you know, rabid Sith dog who's trying to go kill a Jedi because he's just so full of rage because of what his master showed him on Malachor, the Jedi did to the Sith, which was kind of cool that we go there. Yeah. But then I was just like, that... What happens here just kind of feels more like we have all these pieces, but we don't put them together in a puzzle that makes the most interesting picture.
Right. And that's a difficult thing with a comic book, too, is you have to walk that line. And again, this is why I'm not beating up on this, and I'm not beating up on the writer or anything like that. You're given a task and you're given a structure, and it is interesting, and the art is really good. But I want to see something that is more, and maybe this is just the type of fan that I am, or that you are, or whatever, but you mentioned Malachor, but give me a whole thing on that. Give me a whole thing.
Yeah, where's the seeing Old Republic Sidious series about that?
Yeah. 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 But give me something where Sidious is teaching Maul and saying specifically, you can't just be an attack dog. And this is why. You got to pay attention to this. Like, blossom that out instead of just a segment into a whole series of lessons, because that would be so, I think it would be so great. Again, it's what was done with the Darth Plagueis novel. It gave this real, it fleshed out this real depth that you could carry forward. But
it almost feels like it kind of needs to be a Darth Maul series in light of like how they did the Clone Wars, where there's like that mm-hmm. fortune cookie at the beginning that always is about the lesson that Maul's going to yes. be learning. But it's a Sith fortune cookie.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. And I so like that. There's, like in red instead of blue.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it kind of creates that. And I think this is one of those things where, you know, you could have it be, instead of just 5-issue run, if you're going to do it like that, it could be a good 10-issue run that allows yes. you to have the opportunity. Because in the end, the comics that I've liked best so far from Marvel have been the miniseries that they've done, mm-hmm. where there's a there's a specific end coming. They're not just trying to make things up, I feel like, to kind of fill page count and issues. They really yeah. have a story that they want to tell. And this was one that I was very excited about because I was like, oh, great. They know they're just going to do a short series. It's going to be on Maul, so they'll be really focused. And I feel like it's really focused here, all the things that I kind of want it to be, but the way that it focuses on the character gives me something that I didn't feel like revolutionized or even really too much added to my view of the character. Like, we always talk about, look, you don't have to change my whole perception on Darth Maul, right? But make me feel like I was glad that I read whatever it was, whether it's a book or a comic, so that it adds to my enjoyment of the films later. When yes. I watch Phantom Menace now, I'm not going to think of this comic, you know?
Exactly. I think you're exactly right. I think you've encapsulated it perfectly. I really do. And I think that the time for comics like this one were back when comics cost 65 cents, where it was just a pulpy thing. But now your ask is $4 to $5 a pop from me. You're asking enough of me that I think it's fair of me to demand, because think about it. They're asking by the end of this, you know, $25 from people. That, you know, look, I know everybody's got to make a living and everything, but, you know, if you're going to ask $25 from me, that's, you know, well, I mean, that's a movie ticket at least. You know, like you get what I'm saying, right? Like, the price point is such that yes. I don't think that this is an unfair commentary from us.
Right. Well, and there are some really interesting things. Like, I actually really enjoyed this whole idea of like a captured Padawan and everything. I thought that was really cool. I loved the Madame Zrexis, you know, being a like running this kind of.
I had a heck of a time coming like up with the pronunciation for her.
Yeah, I just made that up. I don't know.
No, I'm going to go with that because, like, I would read it. I was like, what?
Oh, but no, I mean, like, her and, like, that whole underworld, because you saw all of these alien species that you'd seen, like, in the Clone Wars
yeah.
with the underworld, like the Pikes or, you know, the Black Sun and all this stuff. Having all that stuff there was, I mean, you even saw the Constable Zuvio people,
yeah, no,
you know, whoever they are.
I was going to say Constable Zuvio's race got more screen time in this than he did in The Force Awakens.
That's absolutely true.
So now I can go buy the figure. Now there's
absolutely
a point.
That's, you want the figure now.
Oh, no, he's not from Force Awakens. He's from the Darth Maul comic.
Yes, he's from the Darth Maul comic. So, you know, like, I felt like they did some things that were really, really cool. And, you know, again, the point of having Ara Singh and Cad Bane and the other bounty hunters with him, he kills everybody that's involved with him because he doesn't want them to know, but he's okay with these bounty hunters knowing who he is. That's kind of strange.
Right.
Again, so I feel like if that part's a kind of excised and it's just him, even that makes this story make just a little bit more sense. I get why they do that, because I kind of feel like that there are points in which they fill in part of the story because you kind of care about whether what's going on with Cad Bane and Ara Singh because we know them, but they don't necessarily add much to Maul. And if you're going to call a comic Darth Maul, I like your idea where it's really about getting inside his head at this point and it not just being like, I hate the Jedi. I hate the Jedi. I hate the Jedi.
And it also, one of the challenges that the prequels faced as well was who's going to live, who's going to die. I already know reading this comic, Darth Maul is going to make it out. And then when you drop Cad Bane and Ara Sing, it's like, yeah, they're safe.
Well, and their other two accomplices, like, you know, one of them dies too, one of the bounty hunters, and you're like, yeah, okay.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well,
and that was what made that character, Madame Syrexis, so interesting to me, because I was like, is she going to live? Will she maybe come out in another comic? And then, mm-hmm. you know, Maul does kill her, but you get this real satisfaction of that happening.
Yes.
And so I felt like, again, that's this, I mean, there, what's funny about this comic is I feel like there's so much that kind of works, and then there's the stuff that's not working, and they really are butting up against each other to kind of, I don't know, maybe wash it out.
I guess, yeah, that seems right. I mean, I would be very interested to talk to somebody who had a more positive reaction to the comic than we have, because I would really want to get that perspective from somebody about why it worked for them better than it worked for me. Like, is I mean, when it comes down to it, we like what we like, we dislike what we dislike. But I would really be interested to hear from anybody that had a higher opinion, that was like, wow, this is a great comic, you know? I mean, I'd even be interested to hear from somebody who had a more negative reaction, you know?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I hit us up on our social media. As we talked about with the polls, we're really trying to interact with you, the listener. We love interacting with you. We're going to continue to do polls, and we'll continue to talk about them on the air, so you're... What you say counts here on our show, not just what we want to say. And it, I think we had some great conversations with that. So go over to the Jedi Masters on Twitter. That's our handle. You can also find us on Join Nerd. You can also find us at Join Nerd Party. That's the whole network. And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Now, what's great about that is we can really interact with you there. We can write really, you know, long-form responses. We've got some great listeners. There's been a fantastic listener. His name is Nick. And every time that we put out an episode recently, he writes, like, a whole essay to us, and it's just phenomenal. Like, I love reading his responses because they're so well thought out, and he's really interacting with us and allowing us to interact with him. And that's what makes this show so worth it. So you can check us out over there. Of course, we're on thenerdparty.com. And if you'd just like to write us an email, you can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and that'll come to John and I. So, buddy, man, if people want to talk to you about any of the polls that we did or anything else, and want to, you know, hit you up on all the other shows you do, where can they find you?
Well, of course, you can find me Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. You can also find me right here on the network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we look at the technical and you know, different inspirational aspects of the different filmmakers and artisans who put Star Wars together with Lucas and now other creators. You can find me with the same co-host from that show over on Stage 9 over on Trek FM, where we talk about that type of thing for Star Trek creators. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And that's just a sort of free-floating platform of insanity, as it were. Matt, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram, the same name. You can find me here on the network with Drea Kaufman talking about Harry Potter on Owlpost. We are walking through each and every chapter of that series. We're almost done with the Chamber of Secrets now, so we're super excited to be diving into the Prisoner of Azkaban soon. You can find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, as well as doing our general geek show there called the 602 Club. It's a blast. I really do hope you'll check that out. We cover as many fandoms as possible as we can over there, so I hope you'll enjoy that. And then I do one more show, and that is called Cinema Stories, and that is all about film through the lens of faith. And so I hope you'll check all those out. And you can find my shows and John's shows all over the place wherever you get your podcasts. So just make sure to check them out and help us out by, you know, hitting us up with a star rating and review on iTunes. So we really appreciate that. It helps the show grow. It helps more people find us. There are a plethora, more than that, of Star Wars podcasts. And,
yes,
you know, if you like our show, you like what you do, help people find that by giving us a star rating and review. So,
yes, it would be very much appreciated. Star ratings are always appreciated. But if you give a review, we can acknowledge you on air, which we would, of course, love to do.
Well, John, after all that, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.